NYPD Blue Balls, Season 1, Episode 22, Rockin' Robin.
Oh.
Spoiler alert, it's because Caruso fucks Robin at the end of this episode, which is very strange. Very, very weird.
It is. It's very strange.
Before we get started, I wanted to let everybody know that NYPD Blue Balls is going to start airing every 2 weeks rather than every week. This is in hopes to keep a more regular schedule, just due to issues such as Amazon not carrying the episodes anymore, and it's getting harder and harder to schedule recordings. We are going to do every other week is when episodes are going to air. Also, I'm going to possibly be talking about a book that I got, True Blue, written by David Milch and Detective Bill Clark, who was the creator and a consultant on NYPD Blue.
What's the name of that book, Kirk?
True Blue!
True Blue Balls?
And what's the subheading over there, dude?
The real stories behind NYPD Blue.
That's what I wanted you to get to.
Okay, thank you. The person you are hearing now is actually Papa Asher.
They know who I am. I was on the last one. My voice hasn't changed.
And, of course, Kyle's here.
I'm not here.
You're in New York.
He's there.
You're on the view screen. You're on the Star
I'm
Trek.
On the Tonight Show, is that what you said?
That's right. You're on the Tonight Show. This episode opens with Sinclair and Caruso having a meeting. Sinclair was the a-hole lawyer that was tearing Sipowicz apart in the pilot episode.
He was Jim Bell's lawyer.
And he's a good lawyer. And that's kind of the point.
And the guy's a really good actor.
Yeah. He's a very good actor.
He plays that role really well.
Let me get his name.
Let's get his name. Do you have his name there?
Daniel Benzali.
Italian.
Look at those sweet glasses he's got on.
Yeah, he's a dude that has a very exquisite taste.
He's a dude that looks like that. He looks like those trash monsters from the movie Nothing But Trouble. You know what I'm talking about, Kirk?
Oh, the like bald ones?
The yeah, big the bald heavy ones. Set bald he's ones? One of those guys. Or he's like a more fucked up Chunk from... Not Chunk. He's a...
Goonies?
Yeah, he's a more fucked up... what's that guy's name?
Chunk from Goonies?
No, it's... Not Chunk. The guy with the fucked up face.
Chunk from Goonies. No, Sloth. You're right.
Yeah,
it's Sloth.
Dill Hole from Goonies. I didn't know it, but you didn't have to be a condescending asshole about it.
I apologize.
Anyways, yeah, but he's really good. I really like him.
And he basically comes in and says to Kelly, this wouldn't happen to be about Janice Lacalze. I'll do it if I have basically rights to all of the media circus that is going to be profitable by this.
He first basically tells him, you can't afford me.
Yeah, in the most dickish way possible.
He's like, you're a cop, you can't
but
afford me.
But he does everything in the most dickish way possible.
That's
so
true.
To him, it's just normal.
True.
Yeah, he's like, also, no offense, like, if you're a lawyer, chances are you're probably an asshole. Like, it's kind of...
Wow. Really?
Like, a lot of lawyers are assholes.
Defense lawyer, yeah.
After that meeting, Andy tries to win Sylvia back with a seahorse pin.
Oh, yeah.
And they have that awkward conversation because what happens is he basically thinks, this will clear it up. And she asks, are you going to meetings? And then he says, kind of. And she says, well, I think you need the tools. And he's like, what's with all the tools? And then she slips. Yeah, I've been going to meetings.
Tools and triggers.
No, tools and... It wasn't triggers. It doesn't really matter.
I think it was triggers, Kirk.
I don't think it was triggers, was it?
I can't possibly be right.
Because she says something like, you need the tools so you know something that doesn't... So you can know what triggers you wanting to drink.
I don't know. I don't know if that's true. I'm going to have to go check it.
But then he goes, what's with these tools and triggers? Where are you getting this stuff from?
Back to you.
Fine. Back to me. But...
You seem to be the narrator of the group.
So, he finds out that Sylvia's been talking about him in meetings. Which, he's been on the attack to get her back.
No. I disagree.
Oh, you disagree.
He says, what's with all this tools and triggers? She says, I've been going to Al-Anon meetings.
Mm-hmm.
He immediately assumes that she's talking about him.
Well, who else would she
talking
about?
She never says, I'm talking about you.
Well, who would she talk
about? She could be there listening. She never says, yeah, I'm going there and discussing you. He just jumps to that conclusion and then hammers on her before she can even say a word.
But. That's true. But when he says, are you talking to people about my problems, she doesn't deny it.
But she doesn't say yes either.
But, I mean,
she's obviously talking about him, though.
I don't remember exactly how it goes, but he goes, are you talking to people about my problems? And she says, Andy, they need you to not be childish or something right now. This is to try to help us if you really... So she's basically saying, like, yes, because I'm trying to help us. That's the way I took it.
Go ahead, keep going.
His emotional outburst is what basically...
is like a child, and she addresses that. We have to be adults here.
Yeah, which is true.
But that's the way he deals with everything. He's an emotionally stunted man.
It's very true. And we don't deal with Sylvia till the end of the episode because Andy's story, which is pretty badass, is he's going to help... What? Why are you shaking your head?
It's a dumb story.
It's rad. It's rad. What do you mean it's dumb?
No, it's not.
No, it's not. They've talked about it all year.
It was set up earlier. It was rad.
Season. All he talks about is this goddamn Bucci case.
The Bucci case is thing. The kid's showing up to lead them to the Bucci case.
The guy showing up to lead him to the Bucci case?
The kid. His kid.
Andy's kid doesn't lead him to the Bucci case.
Andy's kid leads him there to where he sees the guy that he finally gets to admit that he stole the kid.
Well, what happened?
To get a car because...
He needs a car.
Bucci sells cars.
Okay, so you're there in New York, there's only one car dealer?
But no, he...
The dude owed him a favor. That's what he kept saying.
Mr.
Bucci owed him a favor.
They used it as a vehicle to put him in that situation.
I don't disagree with you that they used the situation of Andy needs to find a way to get closer to Andy Jr. Also, we need a really big win for Andy at the end of the season. We have this Bucci case. We can merge them together by making Mr. Bucci a guy who sells cars.
By the way, what kind of name is Bucci?
It's the name they went with. There's
they could
a lot
have
of...
got something better than that. And Andy and his kid have a strange relationship.
Well, of course they do. They haven't spoken in years.
Right? And all of a sudden, I'm going to buy you a car?
Well, in an episode before this, or two before this, or three... His son gets arrested on a drug charge,
mm-hmm.
and he has to go and investigate it, and he mm-hmm. finds out that the guy has the wrong guy. Mm-hmm. He basically got his son out of prison, and then after that happened, he's like, I'll drive you home. And he's like, oh, no, I'll take the ferry. And he's like, no, I'm going to drive you home. And then he said, I drove my kid home last night. So they're building relationships, and his son needs a car, and he's like, I can help you get a car. And he helps him get a car. He's trying to be a good person.
He's trying to be a good dad. Anyways.
The point I was making about Andy's storyline is it's really cool because he shows up just to help his kid with a car, and then based on one interaction and then like three questions, it sends him down the rabbit hole of solving this case. A case that is plagued
him. Set him off was because he could read people's...
expressions and...
Read people how people are, and he saw that that guy was acting really weird around him, but Mr. Bucci was like, oh, I'm going to go over there and say hi to him. I haven't seen him in a while. So Sipowicz put two and two together. Like, oh, he hasn't seen him. They're supposedly friends. Why is he acting so weird around him? Then he's like, I never talked to this guy, and you've known him for so long? That's someone I haven't talked to, because Sipowicz is still thinking about the case. So, I don't know, it's not that far-fetched.
The regular case that's going on, they find a priest with his pants down in a park, stabbed.
Yeah.
They work the case, because this is also a lot of the molestation stuff. Mm. Like, this is way before all the reports came out in Spotlight, and the fact that there's a really big problem with priests having sex with children. I don't know if you guys felt it. There's still an air like that did happen. Like, even though during the time this was made, it wasn't as prevalent, the knowledge that priests were, like, fucking dudes on the side.
It was known. It just wasn't... How can you say it? People knew that stuff going on. Nobody had like, made a case out of it. Nobody had, like, put all the numbers together and said, look how fucked up this is.
So it's just kind of like a...
But it's kind of like common knowledge.
That some priests are just
yes
banging dudes.
Yes, but I don't think they knew.
I haven't seen Spotlight yet.
It's on Netflix. It's great.
But didn't, like, it kind of felt like they knew for a really, like, people, when they were interviewing people, the reason, like, because I've seen clips where people are like, wait, what? Like, this guy also knew about it? This guy also knew about
yes.
it? Like, it just is like a bigger rabbit hole of people who knew this shit
yeah,
was happening.
Yeah, the Catholic Church was able to cover it up.
Yeah.
To keep it out of the press and out of the mainstream. But you know that the people that it happened to
knew about it.
Knew that it happened to them. And yeah. once you get a, you know, a significant number of people, it's out there.
Well, yeah. One of the scenes that I saw of the show was like, one of the priests was like, well, like, was being interviewed by Rachel McAdams. And she's like talking to him. And he's like, yeah, you know, I molested this boy. And she's like, wait, what? And then he's like, she's like, you know, that's wrong, right? He's like, no. The priest before that did it to me,
right?
Like, and it like became this big old thing. And he, like, the guy telling him was like, I don't see what the problem is, but yeah.
That whole story kind of, like, you can tell they were really trying to throw weight on this last episode because the story was a rent boy was being talked to by this priest, and the priest was trying to get them all on the straight and narrow. And in one of the interviews, we see a famous face, Michael Ian Black, for some people that appreciate comedy. He's in this episode. Pretty
yeah.
funny. But basically, this guy, he talks to the rent boys, the male prostitutes, outside of his church, and he tries to get them to rethink their life and get them on the right path. And he actually bought this one a bus ticket back home, and the guy stabbed him and then tried to make it look like he was propositioning him for sex.
Yeah, that was weird. Like, I didn't really understand why he stabbed him.
And then when they go to talk to him, he says, "No one's gonna help me, man. I'm HIV positive," which was like just. And then he's having this weird, like, crying moment in the cage, in the holding, and it's very much like, we don't even know who you are, bro. With, like, the really hard dramatic scenes, you have to, like, know who you are first.
Well, remember when the thing was made?
93.
And just
94.
Just, you know, somebody saying I've got AIDS was, you know, I don't know if controversial is the right word, but it had a lot of umph behind it just by somebody saying it.
And it's like, but that was such a button on, like, the story, because the story was unfolding like, oh, it's a priest, so now we have the church to consider, and we have his friends.
That priest thing is also what helped Caruso and his priest friend kind of patch things up.
Yeah, good point. They patched it up.
Patched it up there. It's true. Well, because he says, hey, I knew that priest. We went to seminary together. He's a good guy. There's no way he could have done this. Which, I mean, speaking to Spotlight, they all said that about each other. Like, every time someone gets accused, they're always like, oh, well, we're repositioning him. He would never do that. It's kind of like always the statement.
No, I disagree.
I disagree? Yeah. Okay.
Yes, they said we're repositioning him. Never, I don't remember once going, anybody saying, no, he wouldn't do that.
All right.
They just removed that guy from the parish that he was in.
Yeah, that's what a lot of the controversy was.
Put him on sick leave for a year and then stuck him in another parish.
But much like how cops look out for each other, like, I feel like within the church and the organization, they'd say things like, well, either A, it was a one-time thing, or we know he didn't mean it, or this or that.
Well, I don't know. You're probably right, but what you said is that's what they said in Spotlight. They didn't ever said that.
Okay, well, maybe I'm speaking hyperbolically, and I didn't think you'd pick apart every single syllable of my words.
Hyperbolically. I know what you said. I know it was wrong. I thought I needed to correct
it.
I think, but I think it's different. I think it's different. Priests versus, and I don't think you can say that priests are kind of like cops. They look out for each other that way. I think when it came to all the priest stuff, they looked at it in a way of, oh shit, this could ruin us financially. Cops don't really look at it that way. Cops look at it as like it's a tight knit group. It's like a brotherhood. Like, I don't think priests look at it that way.
Well, plus,
I think because if you're a real priest, then if you know this person's doing this, your first thought is, this guy's a crazy, sick animal and has nothing to do with what I am, and you're not going to protect him. You know what I mean? So, and then, so, but I think the higher ups looked at it and were like, fuck, if this gets out, people are going to stop coming to our church. We're going to lose money. That's what they were worried about. They weren't, like, they're not looking out for each other. They're looking out for getting paid.
I also think the way that that priest came to Kelly is way different.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. He came to him saying, hey, I know you. You're my friend. I know that guy. That I don't think that happened. You should check it out.
Even though he was pissed at him, he was like, I still got to come tell you this.
It wasn't like they had accused him of something, and then somebody came in and said, no, 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 no. We're going to cover this up. This guy came to him and said, hey, I think you need to check this out.
I guess my point was not, obviously, this guy is sticking up and lying for him. What I'm saying is that has to be put into consideration, maybe from the audience's perspective of, maybe, which is why we spoke to that first priest in the beginning. Like, if you go to a priest, like Spotlight, if you go to a priest and you say, what are you dealing with? How are you dealing with all the issues of child molestation in the church? They'll say something like, oh, well, there is no issue. We just have a few bad apples, which is not an appropriate answer because there's, like, statistically, it's not a few bad apples. It's a weird systematic disease amongst these dudes.
Yeah.
But the automatic answer is a very politically correct one. And I don't think in this case he was just, like, he was just sticking up for his buddy. Because why, you guys are right, why would Dean Norris's character, Father Downey, why would he just show up to a place where the guy hates him to go, hey, you working on the case about that guy? Yeah, I don't think he was...
Yeah, their MO is pretty much to, you know, run and cover.
Yeah, so...
Not to go towards the police.
Sibowitz has a scene where he's talking to Mr. White. And he found out through vehicle records that he had
I thought that was such, like, a lame cop-out name.
Mr. White?
Yeah. Like, if this guy's gonna be, like, an important character who, like, stole, like, some guy's
child
daughter, like, give him a little bit more than just Mr.
Yeah, but
White.
They had to make up for the Burbus name or whatever.
Bucci?
Bucci.
Burbus?
Whatever.
Sounds like a Pokemon.
Bucci is like Bucci Ball.
Bocce Ball? Bocce
Ball.
Exactly. Dildo. With an accent.
Anyway, he has this real Batman scene where he makes it clear that the guy's not going to leave the room until he tells him where the kid is. Because even though he has very shaky evidence, he's convinced this guy did it and will not let him leave until he gives him the information.
Yeah.
He thinks the guy killed the kid. He thinks that this white guy killed the kid.
Yeah, he thinks
it's
he's
not,
involved.
It's not until the guy goes, yeah, well, she's over at my sister's, and he goes, she's alive?
Well, no, he says, tell me where she is, like, in terms of her body.
Right.
Yeah, so he does say that. But he's convinced that this guy knows where she is in terms of her body, so he's not letting him leave until...
Yeah, which was kind of a stretch, because how would he know? And by the pieces that they gave you, there's nothing there to go on.
He said you had a car titled in your name up until the day of up to her disappearance. That matches the description of four different witnesses. Which, that's not really enough to go on because the dude owns and sells cars.
Right.
So he's basing it off of that little information and the awkward interaction he had with Mr. Bucci. Which, I don't know about you, if that happened to somebody I know that I was fairly good friends with and I didn't see him for a long time after that happened, I'd feel weird about talking to him because how do you talk to a guy like that years after that happens? So it...
Yeah, he never really... He does, like, that's the thing. He doesn't look him in the eye. He doesn't, like, even shake his hand.
Yeah, there's not
like,
enough there for...
He has nothing to do with him. He just wants to get out of there.
But, Dad, I would agree with the Dad. That's really not enough for Sipowitz to go on. They're really just hammering the idea that he intuits that this guy did it.
That's fair. I agree with that. I can see that a little bit.
And it gets really awkward when he basically says, I'm not going to let you leave until you confess. And it's still possible that guy has no fucking idea what he's talking about. So, like, what? Is this, like, angry warthog just going to stare at him all night?
But alas, Sipowitz is right.
No, but when Sipowitz starts talking to him about it, he gets antsy. And if you didn't do anything wrong, you wouldn't be antsy. You know what I mean?
I think I'd be antsy if I think this stocky dude is about to like kick the shit out of me. But then again,
well, because I'd rather have him talk to the guy first. Sipowitz talk to that guy before he called it in. I'd rather him build suspicion that way, because I think you guys are right. It just takes away from like this. It just gives him like, oh, he intuitively thought it. I would rather have him talk to him first, then maybe called the precinct and been like, hey, this guy gave me a weird vibe. Do you think you could run his name through?
Then something like that, absolutely.
Then it would have been like, oh, okay, that pushes it over. But
hey, did you know, this guy, that guy, whatever. I agree.
Mm-hmm. Like, because I understand when Bucci, when he goes, I'm going to talk to this guy, and then Bucci's like, why? He goes, I never interviewed him. And he goes, he was around you a lot all the time. He knows your daughter. Like, that's someone I haven't interviewed. I could see that obsessive part coming through, but just the order that he did everything was weird. I agree with that.
And he gets the information from the dude that is the dude's sister has, yeah,
like,
has the girl. And he said, oh no, don't worry, we told her that her parents were killed by gang criminals.
Yeah, that was the weirdest thing to me. I was like, you go through this whole elaborate plan to steal this girl, and that's what you tell her? Like, you know, like, I don't know.
That, yeah, it's a very, very strange situation. I'm trying to find the picture now, but I can't find it. They go to raid the house. He basically has the interrogation with Mr. White. He comes out and he says, Mr. Bucci, your daughter may be alive. Come with me right now. And they start driving. They come to this house and they go to raid it. And the woman is, gross. Large. Obviously psycho looking. And she grabs a knife and she tries to slash at Sipowicz. And it does that NYPD Blue thing where they can't really afford to make quality action scenes, so they just slow it down and take out the sound and then put music over it. But the important thing is there's a meetup with Mr. Bucci and his daughter, which is heartwarming. But something happens that I don't know if you guys noticed. He gets a slash on his vest.
Yeah. And well, because the if you watch in really slow motion, she slashes at him with a fake knife.
Yeah, it's pretty.
The knives aren't supposed to bend.
It's pretty shitty.
Blade in someone's stomach, and it bends like it's like a cheap.
It's one
toy,
of those new bendable knives.
It's a bendable knife. Order now, you get two for the price of one. So she slices at him, but I don't know if anybody caught it because they show Sipowicz after like Mr. Bucci holds his daughter's hand and walks away. He does a pose where he's standing with his vest, and because of the slash, it slashes across police, and then the light catches the arm, the crease of the arm, and it makes an S on his chest, like Superman. If you watch it, there's an S on his chest.
Okay.
Dad's upset with me right now. Any comments?
Nope.
It's true. If you look at it, it looks like an S.
Was that brought to us by Stretch Armstrong? Stretching that.
Did you pick that up in your book? Did
you? No, I noticed it the first time I saw it. Was it slashed? I was like, why would they pick this slash? And then when they show him standing there, the crease of the thing hits, and then it draws your eye to make the S.
I'm just going to have to go back and take a second look.
Yeah.
Or a third look.
Basically saying he's the Superman.
I did notice that when she slashes it with the fake knife, it's bright yellow underneath. I thought that was kind of weird.
Like insulation, right?
Yeah.
Yellow insulation.
To make sure that he doesn't really get stabbed.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because they can't show a slice.
And did you notice the vest goes down and covers his groin?
Well, yeah, you don't want to get shot in the dick.
Yeah, your face is okay, though.
I learned that from. I learned that from South Park. You never shoot a guy in the dick.
Oh, South Park, give me a break.
Hater.
South Park and everything.
There's a reason it's going on season 20.
Yeah, related to everything. Anyway. No, I'll have to go back and look and see if it is Superman.
It looks like an S to me. I'm always crazy. But
after the kid drives off with the dad, does he like fly away?
No.
No?
It's symbolic. It's supposed to represent that he is a superhero.
Does he run faster than a speeding bullet?
And he has that moment. He has that cool moment with his son as well as Costas, where Costas basically says, maybe not now, but in the future. And
because he kind of presses about that fucking pin.
He tries to get her to take it with his humor by saying they have some kind of return policy, and you got to have 3 copies of the receipt. And if you're not going to wear it, I am. Which is, he's just trying to like charm his ass into giving it to her. But then she says no, and he walks out the door with Andy Jr., implying that if we get another season, we get to see more of that.
But also, don't forget that dumbass bitch Robin comes back.
Yes, dumbass bitch Robin.
For no reason.
D-A-B-R, dumbass bitch Robin. And they have a scene that I talked through with Dad, because I was like, this is where, because Robin was with this guy named Jimmy Paid.
I remember.
Jimmy Paid, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But then they have this, like, awkward date where she's like, what am I going to do with Jimmy's millions? Go to school? And then, of course, Caruso's like, yeah, do whatever you like. I'm supportive. And then they make out in his car.
Yeah.
Apropos of nothing. Just...
Dude, she's been shacking up with this old man for a long time.
She wants some of that...
You see some beefcake like him, man.
You see some beefcake like David Caruso?
You're, you know... Taking some that to Tuna Town.
Some of that ginger beef, some of that ginger kale. And
she wants something. She ain't shy.
No, she ain't.
She knows what she wants.
And then she shows up. Now, I said this during the episode.
You said a lot of things during the episode, which made it kind of hard to hear, by the way.
Apologies.
Yeah, no problem.
She said during the episode, Jimmy told me that
you got to crack corn.
You got to live your life. And basically no regret. I can't remember the specific quotes. But she lays out 2 things that Jimmy said, which basically gave her free pass to fuck Kelly. Because the way she said it was, look, he always told me to live my life and have no regrets, and I want to bone you. So it's kind of like Jimmy giving us permission.
I didn't take it that way, but whatever.
I don't think that's it at all.
Well, that's exactly what she did before she...
Oh, she said that this guy taught her some life lessons, and that's how she's living her life.
But
got nothing to do with him giving permission.
This goes back to my theory that Robin is not a good person, which I said in the episode where she was introduced. I think when she went back to that station, she said, I'm going to get some premium Kelly Wiener, but he might have reservations because he used to be Jimmy's friend. And Jimmy is technically my husband before he died. So how do I get in there, get that ginger stick, but also get him off the hook for Jimmy?
I think Caruso has proven through this first series, that or first season, he's got no conscience when it comes to...
getting pussy?
Yes.
I guess that's...
If it's ever available, he's doing it.
but they have the... They have
but the reason I bring up Robin is because Andy Jr. wants to, like...
Oh, yeah, Andy...
for her when she walks in.
Yeah, he was checking it out.
He was digging what was for sale. Apparently, he wasn't paying for that car, so he's like, hey, you want to check out my 86 Seville I just got? You want to hang out with me and my dad and get a steak?
or a couple?
Oh, Jesus. But this thing... The episode ends with classic NYPD Blue sex scene.
Yeah.
Which is silhouette,
right.
Slow motion humping.
Silhouettes,
yeah, weird.
Lots of skin from non-specific areas, side boob.
The tops of asses, so you don't see cheeks.
Right.
You see backs.
With cracks.
Backs and cracks. That's the NYPD Blue guarantee.
You know, it's weird that wasn't the name of an episode.
One of the episodes where... like, spoiler alert, one of the episodes where Baldwin is boning the DA, and it would just be them. Like, it would start with them just boning. That's a Backs and Cracks episode. And you can call it Backs, Blacks, and Cracks.
Or it would be Blacks, Backs, and Cracks.
Oh my gosh.
Anyway. Also, I said this has probably the worst ending lines of a season ever, and Dad disagreed with me.
Okay.
Where it was, they're lying in bed... And then, I think Caruso says, "It's almost spring." And she goes, "It's the best time of the city."
Why is that a terrible line?
And then she says...
I thought it was pretty dumb.
And then she says, like, "I'm glad you're here, Johnny." He's like, "I'm glad too." And then it just ends.
And that's... To say "I'm glad I'm here" is a dumb line?
It's the dumbest way to end this
Live show. A little, man.
And that's it for everything I got. So is there anything anybody wants to add?
I didn't write much down. I didn't really care for that last episode a lot.
Really?
No, because it's the end of this fucking season and Simone will be here in 6 episodes. So that's all that
it's
matters.
It's 6 whole before he gets in? I thought it was 4.
No, I think it's 5, actually. I think the 5th episode is Simone Says.
And Simone.
And then the show takes off.
That's right. That's when the show gets its feet and starts running. So get ready for season 2 of NYPD Blue Balls, which will be the next episode. Season 2, episode 1.
Ep 1. Season 2, Ep 1.
Every episode of NYPD Blue Balls is on AsherBrothersPodcast.com or under NYPD Blue Balls anywhere podcasts are. I'm not going to say who I am and mention who else is here because I got punished last time for doing that. So instead, I will say have a great week and enjoy yourselves.
Goodbye.
Oh, we're not going to do the do you recommend anything anymore?
No, Kyle. You've lost that privilege.
Why'd you have to say my name? Because you wanted people to know who was talking.
What? I don't know what you're talking about.
Recommend what?
What do you mean? What do you mean, Papa Asher?
Recommend what?
Oh, usually...
I saw Bad Moms. That was funny. I say go see it.
Go see Bad Moms?
Yeah. All right.
Go see Bad Moms if you can. It might already be out of theaters because there's a lot coming out right now. But go see it.
All right.
Anyway, thank you for listening. Have a good one.